Jeff, you want to do the pledge tonight?
We are now recording and streaming.
All right, as long as everyone, this is the Wednesday, August 5th meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Can we get a roll call, please?
You're muted, Amy.
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Lee?
Here.
Chair Ray Ressam?
Here. Director Lee will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Very good. If you all mute yourselves and visualize a flag in the distance and follow along, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for that. Under agenda review, do we have anyone who wants to reorder any items this evening?
No.
How declarative. Then we will proceed as published. This takes us to item 4, public comments that are not appearing on tonight's agenda. I don't know if I'm asking AGP or Amy. I'm going to go to Amy and see if there's anybody in the queue or in the email who wants to comment on items not on tonight's agenda.
Yes,
I have.
Oh, go ahead, Amy. I'm sorry.
Cynthia Replogle is the only attendee, and there are no emails.
Okay. Does she want to comment in public comment?
She has not raised her hand.
Okay, excellent. All right, then I'll go ahead and close public comment and we'll go on to the consent agenda. This is items 5A, approval of warrants, and 5B, approval of meeting minutes for July 1st, 2020. Did we have any questions of staff?
I have had a couple, just a couple little questions. Are you ready? The outfall line repair, is that finished now?
Yes, Director Austin, that is complete.
Okay, so those are the last. And then I just didn't know what this meant. USA Blue Book, structure maintenance, polybin, polymer feed system. What is that?
That was a budgeted item, and that item was just purchased through USA Blue Book. It's for our polymer system, and that assists us with primary settling and our primary clarifier.
Okay, thanks. And OVIBO, structural maintenance, the FFR blower. What's OVIBO? Is that the name of a company that's...
OVIBO's a manufacturer, and we actually use those funds for the rehabilitation of our FFR distributor drive.
Okay. And then just the last one, the LAFCO budget share. Slow Act TTC.
So I'll take that one. All agencies contribute to LAFCO's annual budget, and LAFCO is the local agency formation commission. I believe I'm saying that right.
Right.
And so LAFCO annually we budget for participation in that, and they send out a notice in May of what every agency's amount is, and so this is just represents our share of the LAFCO budget.
Okay, that's all I had. Thank you.
Any other questions of staff on 5A or 5B? Then we could perhaps entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. We approve the consent agenda as presented.
And I'll second that, subject to no public comments.
Thank you for that. And anybody have their hands raised, Amy?
There are no hands raised, but we do have one more call-in user.
Okay. Then with that, can we get a roll call, please? We have a motion and a second.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Ray Ressam?
Yes. This takes us to our action items tonight. Item 6A is awarding a contract for coating services to National Coating and Lining Company for the primary clarifier number 2 rehabilitation and coatings project and increase Cannon's construction management contract. Mr. Gent.
I'll go ahead and take that over.
Oh, even better. No offense, Jeremy.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. The item before you is to award a contract for coating services to National Coating and Lining Company for the primary clarifier number 2 rehabilitation and coatings project and increase Canon's construction management contract. Staff's recommendation is to award a contract for coating services to National Coating and Lining Company for the primary clarifier number 2 rehabilitation and coatings project in the amount of $41,968 and a $4,500 increase for Canon's construction management contract. Some background. On February 5th, 2020, the district awarded a contract for its primary clarifier number 2 rehabilitation and coatings project. The project consists of removal and disposal of the old clarifier mechanism, installation of a new district furnished clarifier mechanism, sandblast and coating of the new clarifier mechanism, and sandblast and coating of the concrete launder, scum box, and effluent box. During the coating of the concrete scum box and effluent box, the district observed a final coating roughness that would not be ideal for the coating of the concrete launder. Ideally, the coating of the launder should be smooth to assist with easy weekly washdown of the clarifier, minimize algae growth and debris buildup. Rough surface supports increased growth of algae and is substantially more difficult to wash down. The following photos show the scum box and effluent box coating roughness. Clarifier launder with a rough coating surface, an ideal launder coating smoothness, and a cross-section schematic of a clarifier. I'm not sure if I don't know if I should share my screen, but I could just kind of go over the pictures. So the first picture you'll see is the scum and effluent box coating roughness, and you can see kind of the roughness of the coating itself. And then the next picture is the clarifier launder with the rough coating and the buildup on the coating itself. And then the picture after that is a picture of an ideal launder coating smoothness. And then right below that, I have a cross section of a clarifier, and then it just kind of just points out what the clarifier launder is, what part of the launder is of the clarifier. After multiple attempts, the current contractor has not been able, nor do they believe they will be able to, produce a finished smoothness that would provide an easily clean surface. Due to the district's contractor not being able to meet the smoothness needs of the district, the contractor issued a contract credit in the amount of $15,748.38 for the non-performed work. To provide reasonable maintenance, proper operation of the primary clarifier number 2, and ensure the necessary coating work is completed, staff solicited two contractors for proposals to complete the coating of the launder. The proposal from SanCon was $37,625.53 in Attachment 1, but did not meet the requirements and specifications of the district. The proposal from National Coating and Lining Company was $41,968 in Attachment 2 and did meet all the requirements and specifications of the district. In addition, staff is seeking approval to increase Canon's construction management contract in the amount of $4,500 for the additional services provided for the above project. Some fiscal considerations for the board. There are adequate funds in the district's adopted budget for fiscal year 2020-2021. Capital Replacement Fund 26 to cover the $46,468 increase in costs. And with that, that concludes my staff report, and I am able to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Director Lee, do you have any questions of staff?
Thank you, Chair. I do have just a couple questions. So is the result of the initial contractor, they just weren't... didn't have the right tools, the right equipment, or just the right expertise to do this coding process, and so that's why. Or was there something in the equipment itself that is not allowing them to do that, and the new contract is for something more substantial?
It's a little bit of both expertise, and then also the material itself and the application. They attempted to create a smooth surface. But we have some contract specifications for holidays, which are basically, holidays are basically the coating comes off the concrete, and then also pinholes. And they weren't able to, in their tests, they weren't able to get sufficient coating with minimal holidays and minimal pinholes. So we decided to move forward with a different contractor.
Okay, and is the exchange of costs, the $15,000 credit, is that an adequate negotiations in your eyes to against the 41,000 that we're considering this evening?
Yes, with the additional work. So part of that launder coating, they had to sandblast the whole launder, which was a significant amount of work. And FRM had completed the sandblasting. So that's why we only get kind of a portion of it compared to, you know, a larger amount. And I do believe it's an adequate amount.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Director Austin, any questions?
Well, that was the question I had about the amount of the credit and how much it would, they had already been paid and what they'd done. So that answered my question. The 4,500 to Canon, that's just to facilitate this coding project now?
That is correct.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that's all I had.
Thank you. And I want to thank Mr. Gent for taking some time to talk to me about this prior to the meeting. So I had my questions answered before the meeting. And I want to say thank you to Michael, who did a fantastic staff report with all those pictures and everything that really removed a lot of the questions. So that was really well done, Michael. Thank you so much. So let's go ahead and open up public comment and see if anybody has their hand raised.
There are no raised hands.
Okay, and no emails in the queue?
No emails.
Okay, then we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring that back around to the board for consideration.
Do you want to make a motion? Are we ready for a motion or anyone?
Yeah, I think that's okay. Yeah,
make a motion that we award the contract for coating services to National Coating and Lining Company for the primary clarifier number 2 rehabilitation and coating project, and increase Canon's construction management contract.
I will second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion? Okay, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Chair Ray Ressam?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item 6B. This is adoption of resolution 2020-417, approving the 2020 update to the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Local Hazard Mitigation Plan.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent. Again, the item before you today is for the adoption of resolution number 2020-417, approving the 2020 update to the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Local Hazard Mitigation Plan. Staff's recommendation is to adopt resolution number 2020-417, approving the 2020 update to the South Slo County Sanitation District Local Hazard Mitigation Plan. Some background and discussion. In April 2019, the district agreed to be involved in the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation planning process for the County of San Luis Obispo. The jurisdiction involved included the County of San Luis Obispo, all municipalities and community services districts within the county, the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, and several sanitation districts. And all 20 governmental agencies were involved in the development of a countywide hazard mitigation plan. A local hazard mitigation plan builds on this countywide work by incorporating mitigation strategies and actions the district could take to mitigate or reduce impacts from possible future disasters, including but not limited to earthquakes, flooding, drought, extreme heat, stormwater, landslides, wildland fires, and hazardous material incidents. Federal regulations governing assistance from the FEMA provide that local jurisdictions must have a FEMA-approved mitigation plan in order to apply for hazard mitigation grants and disaster relief. Development of the countywide plan process took place over the last 2 years and involved multiple meetings with the involved agencies and 2 public workshops that occurred on March 19, 2019 and April 30th, 2019. The plan was prepared by the John Wood Group with draft copies submitted to the California Office of Emergency Services and to FEMA for their approval. On April 7th, 2020, FEMA reported their approval with the plan. The proposed plan update will supersede the district's current 2015 local hazard mitigation plan. The district's plan Annex T is provided in Attachment 1. Some fiscal consideration. The multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan's total cost was $175,000. Participating in an operational area-wide local plan allowed the county to apply for a federal hazard mitigation grant and was successful in obtaining the grant, which reduced costs by 75%. The remaining 25% costs were divided on a per capita basis among the participating agencies, requiring the district to contribute $750, which was paid in 2019. And with that, that concludes my report, and I am available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Okay, let's see if any of the directors have questions. Director Austin, any questions of Michael?
Not right at this time. On the report, though, I just had a couple comment on the table T7, just on the depot. The year was blank, and I don't know if you can change that to 1904.
Do you know what page that is, Ms. Austin?
Item 6B, let's see, Annex T11, it says. I didn't have a page number.
Okay.
It's right in towards the beginning.
Let's see.
It's table T7.
Yes.
Under historic and cultural resources. Okay.
What year was that, I'm sorry?
1904.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I just had a question on the Oceano's top two industries are retail, trade, agriculture, forestry, fishing, and hunting. I don't know where they came up with like fishing and hunting.
Okay. I apologize.
That's the next page item. It's the same T7. I just was curious who came up, because I don't know of any hunting that in Oceano, or if even fishing is sport, you know, that's not an industry. So I was just curious where that came from.
I can ask the county or Wood, who provided this.
And forestry too.
Where they got that information from.
Yeah. That's all. It's a very thorough. It's a great plan.
Okay.
So thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Director Lee, any questions?
No questions, just a quick comment afterwards.
And same for me. So let's go ahead and go to public comment and see if any of our listeners want to raise their hand.
We have one hand raised, and it's Cynthia Rapogel.
Amy, are you going to let her in? Or?
Oh, I thought AGP would. I will. I don't have the ability to let her in. AGP, can you help me?
Yes, I will. It's saying that it won't allow her to talk, so I have to promote her to panelists just for a moment. Okay, Cynthia, can you hear us?
And Cynthia, you'll need to unmute yourself.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Good. Hi, this is Cynthia Rapogel. I just noted, and I'm sorry, I don't see any page numbers on here, but it's Annex T10. And it's figure T2, critical facilities in the sanitation district. The sphere of influence boundary there does not appear to be correct. So I think that figure needs to be revised. That's all I had.
Can you please say that number again? What page you're on? I know it's not a number, but I'm trying to find the right attachment.
Yeah, Annex T10, and it's figure T2, critical facilities in the sanitation district.
Is it a picture or?
It's a map. It's right above the page that Director Austin was talking about, the depot.
Oh, I see it. It's the one with all the red dots all in there.
Right. Yeah, the red dots don't appear to actually show the sphere of influence.
Do any of our staff members, Jeremy, do you have any comment on that?
Jeremy, did we just update our sphere of influence? I believe this may have been when this was completed. It was I believe prior to the update to our sphere of influence.
Yeah, so there was a LAFCO update, but it didn't modify our sphere of influence. There was one exception, but it was so minor it didn't show graphically. But I'm curious to what the speaker is specifically noticing, because this does match the district's LAFCO boundary from my recollection. So if she's identified a particular area, that might be more helpful in me getting back to LAFCO, who generated this initial exhibit.
No, I just only see some red dots along the southern portion, and they don't define an area to the east and north.
Okay, so I can elaborate when and if I have the floor, I can answer the question.
Let's see if we have anybody else in public comment, and then we'll have staff respond to all of those. Thank you. Does anybody else, any of our attendees, have their hands raised?
At this time, no.
Aren't Zoom meetings fun? All right, I'll go ahead and close public comment. Let's bring this back to staff. So Mr. Gent, would you want to go ahead and talk about the difference between the red dots and the border lines?
Yeah, so what, and it is graphically not the greatest exhibit, but the red dots represent what's called the sphere of influence. So the district would have say in development inside of those red dot white areas. Now the pink is fully inside the district boundaries, where we have existing absolute authority. And so in LAFCO jurisdictions, as many of your agencies probably also have what's called an SOI or a sphere of influence. And so what happens in those areas matter to you. And what you're seeing is these regions along the border of the district boundary where that we would be notified if some development were to happen, and we would have some say up front on that.
Thank you for that. So let's go ahead and bring this back for Director Lee said he had comments before we consider a resolution.
And I guess just the quick comment and maybe a logistical question. So is this time sensitive to the point to where we can make a motion ultimately to adopt this if we so choose, and then have you clarify those two comments, one from Director Austin, one from, and I think Jeremy, you mentioned that we were okay with the map, but so I guess the question there is, are we okay to proceed with this item tonight based upon what we've had talked about this evening? And I would think that'd be for Jeremy.
I would have to circle back with the county unless Michael knows. I do know they had time commitments that we were asked to meet, but I don't know if there's a buffer built into their timeline. Unless Michael knows, we could take direction. I believe we could take direction to make, minor adjustments and take it forward as noted. And I don't believe any of the comments I heard would be disagreeable to the larger crafter of the document.
Okay, and so I definitely appreciate that clarification, and I'm comfortable moving forward with it in that fashion. So I guess my comment is just that I appreciate the county spearheading this and the district working with it and all of the cities and other districts and other entities being part of this, because I think in addition to having an updated plan, it also gives the district's staff a chance to meet and to network with other agencies and other partners throughout the county. So while I think there's a definite benefit to having an updated local hazards mitigation plan, I think an added benefit is the camaraderie and the ability for staff to work with each other across agencies.
Director Austin, any comments?
Just I agree totally with what Jeff just said. I think it's a it was a very well done report. It's I just agree with everything he said about working with the other agencies, and I'm very, very happy with it.
The only thing I would add is that not besides the regional camaraderie, there is no way our staff could have got this done for $750. So I appreciate that part of saving our ratepayers money. So thank you for participating and making that happen. So let's go ahead and consider potentially a resolution. I'm going to ask maybe Director Austin to make that resolution so you can discuss the change that you wanted as part of that approval.
Okay, well, let me find the... so I want to make a motion that we approve resolution... I missed it. I got to get back here. 2020... It's 2000. No, I got too far ahead of myself. Just a second. Okay. Okay. Let's see at the beginning.
It's on page 2.
Okay, I'll get there. I got way ahead of myself over there. Resolution number 2020-417 to adopt the 2020 update to the local hazard mitigation plan and add in the date of the Oceano Railroad Depot as 1904 and to see if there's any of clarification of the industries in Oceano that say forestry, fishing, and hunting, because I don't think those are industries in the town. It's not. And yeah, that's it.
I will go ahead and second that.
And as a point of discussion, should we add in the concern of the caller that we just triple check that that's the correct map?
Sure.
I'm okay with that.
Okay, with that friendly amendment, let's go ahead and get a roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Ray Ressam?
Yes. Sorry, I'm scrolling. That takes us to the big item of tonight. This is item 6C. This is the debt financing for the redundancy project. Let's go ahead and turn this over to, I'm guessing, Jeremy, who will introduce others.
Yes, good evening. Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is regarding debt financing for the redundancy project. It's recommended that your board adopt resolution number 2020-48, adopting a debt management policy, and adopt resolution number 2020-419, authorizing the execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation in the maximum principal amount of $25 million to finance wastewater projects and approving related documents and actions, and adopt a resolution number 2020-420, authorizing and providing for the incurrence of indebtedness for the purpose of providing a portion of the cost of acquiring, constructing, enlarging, improving, and or extending its wastewater treatment facility to serve an area lawfully within its jurisdiction to serve, and adopt resolution number 2020-421, authorizing the execution, delivery, and sale of certificates of participation to the U.S. Department of Agriculture in the maximum principal amount of $4,464,000 to finance wastewater projects and approving related documents and actions. I'll now turn it over to Alex Handlers, who is our financial consultant with Bartle Wells. And we also have James Wozniak on the line. He is our bond counsel and can answer legal questions related to the documents. Here you go, Alex.
Well, thank you. And nice to see everybody. We got some new faces here. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting in the past. We've worked with the district since about 2015, I think, was when we started working on the prior rate study. It was kind of built, done, looking ahead to financing the redundancy project. So I know the district's been planning on this for a long time, so we're, I think, coming into the final stretches here. What's before the board tonight, as Jeremy just highlighted, there are four separate resolutions that are needed to authorize the financing to go forward, some for the COPs, some for the USDA loan. And I also wanted to cover just a little bit of background information. The reason normally we wouldn't be coming this soon before issuing debt, because we don't plan to, you know, finally size the debt until after the district receives construction bids. But for the USDA loan, they want you to have all the stuff authorized before you go out to bid. So that's why we're bringing this a little sooner than we normally might. In terms of the redundancy project, you know, Jeremy mentioned there's, you know, periodic updates at board meetings. So you might be familiar, the plans are to finance the project with a combination of a low interest rate USDA loan, which is great news. The district was able to get a commitment for, you know, a little over $4.6 million at an interest rate of 1.375%. So that's great. And the rest of the project would be funded predominantly from what are called certificates of participation, which for those not in the bond industry, you can think of as being exactly like bonds. They're just structured very slightly differently to make sure you're complying with the California laws. And the district also plans to contribute a chunk of cash to the project. You started raising rates back in 2016 and your rate increases are fully phased in. I think the good news there is that even though the project cost estimates might have been lower 5 years ago or even a couple of years ago, that the rates you adopted are still adequate to fully fund the facility and provide a little bit of a buffer in case the project comes in a little higher. Nobody knows where the project's costs are going to come in. What else did I want to mention here? You know, before the last rate increases, I see we've got some board members that weren't involved in that. The district hadn't raised its rates for 6 years before they did kind of that phase in a few years ago. So the district went through and adopted those rates. And even now that they're all in place, all the member agencies have rates that are among the lowest when we did a survey of all the regional agencies. So the rates are still looking good. And this is kind of your big project. Hopefully it's out of the way and there won't need to be any other significant rate increases going forward. Other than be prepared, at some point you probably need to do inflationary increases every year just to keep the rates in line with the cost of service. In terms of schedule, you know, I mentioned why we're here tonight, but there's one more document that we're going to come back for board approval for, and that's a preliminary official statement, which James Worzyniak is working on. He's bond counsel, as Jeremy mentioned. So he's done a great job with his team pulling all the documents together on you know, quick notice and getting them in close to final form. Some of the documents that are being approved of tonight, you're not approving the final form, you're approving the form of them. So there's still time to make adjustments, and your own legal counsel has weighed in on those documents already, just so you know. But you know, the plan is to come back in October with this approval for this preliminary official statement, which is an offering statement for the bonds, and it'll have a lot of information about the bonds and the district in there. And we'll be able to get in all your updated information for this prior fiscal year, which just ended, since you know you won't have your audit in place, but I think there'll be enough good draft information in place for the investment community out there. Then the plan is, you know, soon we're going to get everything ready. So as soon as you get those construction bids and have a little time to analyze them, which is anticipated that would happen, you know, roughly around the end of October, that the bonds would be ready to go out for sale very soon thereafter. You know, we'd update the district's financial projections, figure out how much you need from the COPs, I should say, which I sometimes call bonds, and how much you would be applying for cash, and just get ready to roll. So when the bids are in, we can finalize everything, go out to sale and get the rates locked in. And typically it takes, you know, 2 to 3 weeks after all the rates are locked in before you actually get the money. And the goal is to get the money, you know, right before you award the contract so you can be comfortable you've got the cash in hand. In terms of what was provided in your staff reports, I know it was kind of a little write-up that includes most of this background, but also legally we included in there some good faith estimates of debt service, which is now required under California government code. And just to summarize that, what we're looking at is a total debt service payment, including the COPs and the USDA loan, is projected to be a little bit more than $1.1 million per year for the full funding, the full project, assuming some cash funding. And this level of debt funding is very similar to what was provided in the financing plan update that we had provided to the board a couple of years ago. So the cost, you know, even though the cost might be higher than what the rate study anticipated, because you're applying more cash to the project, since the project was delayed, you've accumulated a little bit of cash. And because interest rates are just so low right now, that the debt service is not going to be significantly different than originally estimated, with a lower project cost and assuming we assume funding from a state revolving fund loan, which is not on the table for this project. But anyway, so you're looking at about a little over $1.1 million of debt service with an average interest rate of about a little over 2.5%. And these numbers I'm providing you are based on slightly conservative estimates of the financing. So we're hoping that the numbers will actually come in lower. However, the real numbers won't be known until the bonds are sold and will be based on the market conditions at the time of sale. For folks who follow the bond market, or don't follow the bond market, you know, with the coronavirus and the initial financial reaction, the bond market was pretty much shut down for a couple of weeks. Interest rates spiked up, things went haywire. But since then, the bond market's returned to a level of normalcy. And, you know, there's initially a few folks testing the water, but now the bond markets are kind of back to full run the way they were before the crisis hit. And there are, you know, significant inflows coming into bond funds. So there's been plenty of investor demand for bonds, which has helped keep the rates really low. We don't envision anything changing, but of course, I can never make any guarantees. But it's the bottom line, it's a really good time to be borrowing money for this project to keep your, you know, keep your debt service as low as possible. So finally, you know, you've got a whole pile of documents in front of you, a bunch of legal documents. So I'm going to give a super brief rundown of what they are, and you know, we'll defer to the board if you have, you know, questions for more detail that James and I can answer. But first, you've got a resolution for adopting a debt management policy. This is only required because there's a new government code that went into effect in California starting in 2017 that requires before you issue debt, you have such a policy in place. So there's a policy that's there. It's a pretty standard policy that we've worked on with James and his firm before for some other clients. So it's it gives you enough flexibility to do what you want and has all the appropriate stuff in there. And the board's always welcome to adjust it in future years. I don't think you will need to, but you have the flexibility to do that at any time. The next resolution is approving the financing of the certificates of participation. So this is going to be the bulk of your long-term financing. We put in a not to exceed amount of $25 million, which I think is more than you'll need to issue. This amount includes not only the amount of the long-term COP funding, but it also includes interim financing for the state for the USDA loan. Because the USDA doesn't give you money up front, you first have got to fully fund the project, and they come in on the tail end and reimburse some of your debt or cash. So there's a maximum authorization of $25 million. We're hoping it's going to be less. And it also approves of not the final versions, but the form of an installment sale agreement and a trust agreement. And those are the documents that detail all the legal requirements that the district's going to be held to for issuing this debt. And one of the key ones I'll point out is there's something called a debt service covenant, kind of like a rate covenant. The way all this financing is secured is since there's no, you know, if when you do, say, take a mortgage out for a house, they use your home as collateral. But for water and wastewater revenue bonds, they're secured by the district's legal covenant that it's going to raise its rates and fees as needed to pay its operations, to pay its debt service, and also provide a little extra buffer, 20% of debt service, to make sure you've got the cash flow to, you know, make your annual debt service payments each year. So that's something you're covenanting to. This is common for all revenue debt. And our financial projections so that you should have no problem meeting these covenants. but, you know, be aware if something changes with the district's operations and, you know, 8 years down the line, that, you know, it could require a rate increase to make sure you're meeting all the basic financial covenants. The second document that's getting referenced in that resolution is a trust agreement with the trustee. That's who you're paying for your debt service. They represent the bondholders. And that's going to detail all the kind of payment obligations you have. So that's the first, that's the first debt resolution other than the debt management policy. The third resolution is a USDA loan resolution required by USDA. So it's just a standard resolution they require. The fourth one is a related resolution for the USDA financing that authorizes the district to issue certificates of participation to USDA. So this is the legal structure of the USDA loan. And similar to the resolution approving your long-term COPs, this resolution approves the same documents, the installment sale agreement and the trust agreement that would apply to the USDA loan. So it's a lot of documents, a lot of legal documents, but I'm going to leave it there and turn it over to the board for if you want any clarification, any questions. And we've got, you know, James here if you really want to get into the nitty gritty on the legal covenants.
Thank you so much for that report. Director Lee, any questions at this point for any of staff or our consultants?
So no specific questions. I do just want to say thank you. And actually, maybe I do have just one clarification question. And I think Mr. Handlers did mention it. So effectively, the district is financing all of the cost, including the USDA funds, but then we will get reimbursed by USDA either along the way or at the completion of the project. Do these instruments allow us to buy down the debt earlier if needed? So obviously the USDA will get paid off as we get reimbursed, but then is there other opportunities to pay off the debt sooner without penalties?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And some of those details haven't been finalized, but typically with most COPs and bonds, there is a provision in there for optional redemption. Historically, you know, when the bondholders or investors are giving you the funds, they don't want you to repay them the next year just because you found a better deal. So there's historically been a 10-year, you know, call period in which you can't refund the bonds. However, what we've been doing in recent years is ratcheting back to, you know, make it more like 8 years. Once you start going any below 8 years, you start to have an impact on your interest rates. And then they want higher interest rates to kind of compensate for the loss of the call protection. So you would have this optional call provision with no prepayment penalty for refunding in approximately 8 years. And, you know, we'll if we could ratchet it back without any interest rate impact, we will do so based on the market conditions at the time. And also, you always have the ability to refund these even the day after you issue the debt through a process known as an advance refunding. But according to the current current federal statutes, you wouldn't be able to do that on a tax-exempt basis. You would have to do that on a taxable basis. The taxable rates are still really low right now, but often it doesn't make sense financially to do that unless you're only, you know, a couple of years before the optional call provision. So yes and no. The third thing is, if you are able to accumulate some money to prepay the debt, you could probably turn around and, you know, earn interest on that, you know, for a few years before you, you know, were able to kind of, it made sense to do an optional prepayment. So yes, you do have the ability, but, you know, financially, it's not going to make sense probably to do it for 5 or 6 years down the line.
Gotcha. Okay. I appreciate that explanation. So then obviously you said obviously no crystal ball with regards to what interest rates are going to do. But obviously the bidding climate is advantageous at the moment. And then we've seen with the USDA that those rates are advantageous. Nothing on the immediate horizon that reflects a bond uncertainty for rates beyond just what's happening in the world right now?
Right. Yeah. No, well, it's actually been you know, good for bond rates with everything that's happening. But yeah, no, I get on, you know, some updates from some of the underwriters periodically. And right now it's, you know, in the beginning there was a lot of turmoil, but right now it's pretty smooth sailing. No one anticipates huge changes in rates. Some people even think they're going to go down, but you're right, there is no crystal ball. And the other thing I'll mention is the USDA funding commitment, which is a real, you know, fantastic the district was able to get this. You know, their committed rate is 1.375% for, you know, their chunk of the financing, a little over $4.6 million. But if the rates are lower when it comes time for USDA to actually give you the cash, they'll give you the lower rate at the time. So it's kind of a lower of 1.375 or whatever else. But, you know, I mean, I don't foresee any, no one foresees any changes, but who knows what happens with world events. If anything, it seems like when there's some, you know, unanticipated event, that often, you know, the rates go down as there's a flight to safety and people look to put more money into bonds rather than other more risky investments. So, you know, it's a good environment now and nobody's foreseeing it. I don't, some, you know, big change. So good news. Yeah, hopefully. Great.
Thank you. I appreciate those are my questions for now.
Thank you. Director Austin, any questions for staff at this time?
I don't have any questions at this time.
Thank you. I just have a couple of quick ones. So I'm going to take my hand off the space bar and actually unmute myself. Okay, and forgive me, I've got a scroll, so hold on. My first question is, actually all my questions are with regard to the debt management policy. So my first question is, all of these things are being done in order to affect the USDA funding, but is there any guidance in terms of, other than the government code section 8855I, that I guess what I'm asking is, has the USDA taken a look at our debt management policy and been and commented on its satisfaction?
This is not required for USDA, so they don't typically look at this, but it's required in California. There were some updates to the California Debt Issuance Code that require all agencies to have this debt management policy. And in there, they, you know, outline a few key things that the policy has to cover. So, so James, the bond counsel, is, you know, we've worked with him with other agencies on similar, you know, debt issuance stuff. So this is, you know, this all meets the legal standards out there, and USDA doesn't even review or approve this.
Okay, yeah. Thank you for that.
Good question. Add to that, just to say hello. It's nice to be with you, board members, tonight. We did work with Alex on this policy. And essentially, what's required by the state law are all the subheadings you see there in Section 2. So subsection 2A, the purposes for which the debt may be issued, you know, long-term debt is what the district's focused on here, obviously, for a long-term project. You know, section B, the types of debt that the district may incur, including USDA debt, as well as COPs and other kinds of certificates of participation. Subsection C is the relationship of the debt to the district's CIP. D is policy goals, and just making sure the district is thinking about what its long-term policies are with respect to debt. And then internal control procedures is section E, ensuring we have a trustee involved, which we do for our COPs to safeguard the safe handling of bond proceeds. So yeah, we've mirrored exactly what is required by the state law, which I think there was a lot of input given to the legislators when they came up with this list of what was required from various, you know, financial entities around the state. What should local agency issuers be thinking about and have in their debt policies?
Well, then you just might as well keep yourself unmuted, because I think you're going to be the one that answers my next question. So section in the debt management policy on section 2A, III, financings on behalf of other entities. I don't understand the purpose of that section. Can you help me with that?
Yeah, that's a good question, board member. And, you know, it may not really be that applicable to you all. You know, it's getting at a situation where you may have a another governmental agency that you partner with and want to form some JPA potentially, or issue a long-term obligation with another governmental entity, or even a third party like a nonprofit 501c3. Again, not likely. And if it's causing any confusion or heartburn, we could take that out of the policy without, you know, without trouble. I think it's a long shot that it would be applicable to an agency like yours, as opposed to a city or another type of local agency. It might be a little more applicable.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you for that. And then I think I had one more. Hang on.
One comment.
Yes.
My apologies. No matter what you adopt with a debt management policy, this is not authorizing the district to do any debt issuance. Each separate debt issuance has to come back to the board for approval. So if there was some other agency, this isn't giving any blanket, you know, authorization to do it. But the other thing I wanted to mention was we did, you know, in James drafting this, and we went over it too. We work with a lot of agencies, you know, debt issuance and financial planning. We try to make sure we preserved adequate flexibility so the district can do whatever it needs to do. So it is meant to be relatively flexible for the district and not impinge you in any way. So that's why maybe it's a little broader than you might have expected.
Okay, well, I guess I'll wait to hear in comments how the rest of the board feels about that particular section. And my last one, I think this is going to be more for Jeremy. So Mr. Gent, on the last sentence of the debt management policy, right before it says end of debt management policy on attachment number two, so on the last page, the last few words is that the expenditure of which will be carefully documented by the district. And I found that kind of ambiguous. What does careful documentation mean?
So this is a phrase that our very astute bookkeeper picked up on during her review. And she and I had a conversation about, and it is vague and ambiguous, and that's why we had the conversation. And we talked about setting up a meeting with Alex and James to kind of go over what, I mean, obviously we'll track it in another account, and that's not a problem for us at all. But as far as what technically is being asked for, we believe we can provide anything, but we just aren't certain what's being asked for. So we do have some follow-up on how to set up this account, and we know that's a task in front of us.
Is that something that we need to enumerate or expand upon now? Or, you know, is it, I know we can change this document at any time, as it said in the staff report, but it makes me just a little bit uncomfortable that we don't have it fully fleshed out. You know, I don't know if that was a comment or a question.
From my perspective, you know, the idea that we're getting at here is, you know, you want to keep track in some kind of book and record kind of thing, you know, and but we don't want to spell that out in too much detail because the district's procedures might change. You go from paper books to an electronic system to a, you know, a cloud-based, you know, accounting system or that kind of thing. And it's the kind of thing, maybe there's a supplemental policy or just something at the staff level, you know, that they come up with to implement this. And it doesn't have to be at the board level. But again, you know, flexibility, the idea is just to keep track of bond expenditures.
I would think so. I'm not sure what. I'll leave that as it is. So any other questions that were generated at this time, or can I go ahead and open up public comment? Director Austin or Lee, do you have a follow-up? I see you unmute.
No.
Yeah, maybe just a quick follow-up on that. Would changing that language to expenditure, which will be carefully documented by the district in accordance with standard accounting principles or practices, would that clarify it for anyone or need provide adequate input?
Who are you directing that at?
Either Mr. Handlers, Mr. James, sorry, or Mr. Gent.
I would personally defer to the board, and if you want to put something in like that, you don't need to. And again, this is just, it's not meant to be a detailed policy that says how you're going to do everything. It's more it meets the government code and gives you the flexibility, you could always implement it how you see fit in the future. But you're right, it doesn't get into too much specificity, and I think that's sort of intentional, but I'll defer to the board.
Okay.
Director Austin, I see that you're unmuted as well.
I don't have any comments, but no.
All right, then let's go ahead and ask either Amy or AGP if the any. But let's open up public comment and see if anyone has their hand raised.
There are no hands raised and there are no emails.
Thank you for that. Then we'll bring this back around to us and close public comment. So Director Austin, do you have comments to make?
I don't have any comments. I think I've heard everything I need to hear.
Director Lee?
I'm great.
So no specific comments, just kind of going towards your concerns with, was it A2III with the financings, financings on behalf of other entities. So I think I'd be comfortable with providing direction to staff to eliminate that paragraph if they deem necessary, but without holding up approval of this tonight. And I'd be interested in hearing if someone had any language that to add to the end of the debt management policy. But other than that, I mean, I think these were obviously documents that were coming back in the timeliness that we asked them to come back to. And this is how we get through the next steps in this process. So thank you for putting all these together and keeping track of all that.
For me, I think while I have technical questions and I tend to get a little bit in the weeds on that stuff, I think I'm satisfied with the, I hate to say ambiguous nature, but maybe the general nature of the document and that it has been determined that it meets the government code. So I think at this point I'd be okay with it as is. I think I'm satisfied with the answer that we got. So I'll kind of leave it to Directors Lee or Austin if they want to change that document in any way. I think I would be ready at this point to move forward on all the items.
I am as well. I just have a logistical question for probably Mr. Collins. In fact, can we do staff's recommendation of all four items under one motion, or do we need individual motions?
You could do them all in one motion. That would be fine.
Then for methodology of being anticlimactic, I will move staff's recommendation.
I'll second it. Any discussion? All right, Amy.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Excuse me?
I'm just saying thank you to everyone for helping put this together.
It's exciting to move forward. Amy, can we get a roll call, please?
Yes. Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Ray Russum?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Amy. We don't have cheerleaders very often at this meeting. I know it's very exciting because now we can all, this is becoming real right in front of us, yep. Right? This takes us to item 6D. This is authorizing staff to bid on the WWTP redundancy project. So let's turn this over to whichever staff is, I don't see Michael's video, so I'm going with Mr. Gent.
Yes, it'll be me. Just let me get some. I'll take myself off mute. Need to get. Why did I make such a big board package? Okay. So the item before you is to authorize staff to bid the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. It's recommended that your board adopt resolution number 2020-422, authorizing the district administrator to advertise bidding documents for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. The district has been working to develop the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project, the largest capital improvement project the district has undertaken since the 1986 improvements. Project is intended to allow major process units to be removed from service for maintenance or repairs without risking violation of effluent permit limits. The project includes the following main components: 2 activated sludge aeration basins, 1 new secondary clarifier, a fixed film reactor effluent and primary effluent pump station, waste activated sludge thickener with modifications to the existing dewatering platform, blower, electrical and motor control center building, yard piping, site improvements, instrumentation and controls, electrical systems, floodproofing of critical plant systems, rehabilitation of existing secondary clarifier, and a new generator to provide backup power for the new facilities. The project design was completed by Kennedy Jenks in April of 2019. Since that time, the district has been working to complete the application with the USDA Rural Development for a low interest loan and complete the pre-construction requirements of the coastal development permit. Since April 2019, the following major milestones of the project have been completed. Procurement of the final coastal development permit occurred in May of 2019. Development of updated financial plan as required for the USDA loan application was completed by Bartle Wells in September of 2019. Selection and procurement of a construction management team, M&S Engineers, your board approved that contract in November of 2019. Completion of additional environmental analyses required for the USDA loan, those were completed in November. Development of updated engineering report is required for the USDA loan application, that was completed in January of this year. Completion of constructability review and final plans and specifications was completed just this past March. Completion of the contractor pre-qualification, your board participated in selection or in advertising of that in May of 2020. Formal consultation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as required for the USDA loan took place during November through May of 2020. Completion of the final environmental reports for the USDA loan and USDA loan application in May 2020, and receipt of letter of conditions for the low interest loan from USDA June 2020. And I'll have to pause there and just thank the full team, the design team, the staff, the board, Alex Handler, James Wozniak, Keith, the amount of documents and review time and the reading that we've all put in to move to where we're at right now is a big undertaking for our small district. And I couldn't be happier with how it's progressing. And so I just wanted to pause and thank everybody. So fiscal considerations. The district plans to fund the project with a combination, as we heard earlier, of sources consisting of low interest rate USDA loan, certificates of participation, and cash funding. The anticipated project costs were included in the previous rate increase that was adopted back in February of 2016. Once project bids are received and reviewed, the project cost opinion and financial projections will be updated to determine the proposed level of funding from the certificates of participation. And staff will return to the board with a request to authorize to sell the COPs and issue the notice of award for project construction. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. And the resolution is attached. Thank you.
Thank you. I see Director Austin has her mic unmuted. Are you ready for questions? Do you have any questions of staff?
I don't have any questions. Just I can't wait for us to approve this. I'm very excited.
Director Lee, any questions of staff?
I'm in the same position where I'm excited to move forward with this, but I did have one question for Jeremy, and that is just to confirm that all necessary permits, either environmentally or construction-wise or encroachment permit-wise, are in hand and ready for the bid package.
All permits are in hand with one exception that's appropriate. We do not currently have the permit that's necessary for the new generator that was mentioned. And that's because until the project's bid, the generator hasn't been selected until we know the actual product, we can't fill out the application for that permit. So we have scope included with Kennedy Jenks, and the Air Pollution Control District is aware of the project. And so that's tracking fine, but all other permits are on hand.
Very good. Great. Good to hear. Thank you.
Bless you, Michael. I just want to say, I know it's not comments, but since Mr. Gent went there, I also want to take a moment to say thank you to prior boards. It wasn't just this board who got this thing rolling. This has been going for a while, and it's not just us. So I want to acknowledge that there was a lot of work done before this group of three got together. So it's been a team effort all along for half a decade. So with that, let's go ahead and open up public comment. Amy, do we have anybody with their hands raised or anything in the queue?
There is no one with their hands raised or emails.
Well, then let's bring it back to us. And there's a lot of smiles that are going to go on tonight because it's just this huge night of stepping forward. Any other comments or a possible motion?
I'm ready for a motion, but since Director Austin has been the longest tenured person on this board, I was going to leave to her to see if she wanted to make the motion.
I started doing it and I was muted and I go, yes, I would like to make the motion that we approve resolution number 2024-22 and authorize staff to advertise bid for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project.
I will go ahead and second that.
Any discussion? Hey, Amy, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Chair Ray Ressam?
Yes.
Yay. Motion approved.
Yay.
Amy, where's my cheerleading?
Woohoo!
All right. Very exciting, everyone. Well done. That takes us to item 6E. This is our District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. Who's going first tonight?
I think I'll go ahead and jump in and go first because mine's short, and most of my items were covered updated in the bulk of the board package, but a couple minor things on the redundancy project. Obviously, we talked about that quite a bit. In addition, we didn't mention the contract documents are currently with the USDA, so they're now going through the final documents, making sure that all the agreements, the American Iron Steel and those components are in the plans. And so estimated key dates, we have planned to advertise with the prior approval on August 31st. And then that will generate a bid opening on October 26th. A tentative bond sale. These are tentative dates, would be at the beginning of December. We would issue a notice to proceed for the contractor in early December, and then project completion would be in the middle of March. And that should say 2023. That is a typo I just noticed. But the completion is March of 2023. Central Coast Blue, we've been talking quite a bit. There's been movement on that project with coordination between the member agencies. And the project team, we continue to discuss whether there is any identified participation for the sanitation district in phase one of the project. As some of the other agencies have adopted their commitment to moving the project forward, there has not been key factors that would have the sanitation district participating meaningfully in phase one of Central Coast Blue. And so we're still participating in the meetings and advocating for the project. But at this point, we're not anticipated to be subject of the MOA that's being drafted right now for phase one. So that was the update I was asked to give by WSC. And so it sounds like we're having a smaller role, which the district is in agreement, or I'm in agreement with on that aspect. So miscellaneous, the district continues to work with a modified schedule. This is due to COVID, and we've increased PPE. We have daily temperature checks for staff, and we do regular cleaning and sanitation of the offices to protect worker and plant safety. There were no plant tours, and a couple upcoming items. We do have KJ's contract that for during construction when they're reviewing the bid documents and those type of things, we have to modify the front end specs of that to be in compliance with USDA. So that will be back on the September 2nd meeting. And as we mentioned earlier, a resolution authorizing district to sell bonds for the redundancy project, the tentative date for that is at the October meeting.
All right.
Let's see if we have any questions for Mr. Gent before we launch into Michael's greatness.
No questions.
All right, Michael.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Michael Jones, Plant Superintendent. I'm reporting the plant operations report for the reporting period of July 1st through July 29th. During this reporting period, the district's facility exceeded its NPDES permit limit for total chlorine residual instantaneous maximum on July 9th, 2020. Report of exceedance is below under exceedances. I'll follow up with that in conclusion with my report. The regional Water Quality Control Board has been notified. All other process values for the month of July have been within permit limitations as shown in our table below. Moving on to some projects, some ongoing projects and some upcoming projects. The primary clarifier number two rehabilitation and coatings projects continues to progress. Fluid Resource Management has begun coating the new clarifier mechanism with final coat to be applied Friday, July 31st. Following the final coat, FRM will complete installation of the clarifier mechanism, scraper, walkway bridge, electrical, and spray bar. Inspection and startup of the clarifier is scheduled for the week of August 17th. And then at that time, we'll move on to the launder coating. Just kind of touch base on the launder coating. Still waiting to hear back on an ETA on when the launder coating will start. So at the next board meeting, I'll be able to report that to the board. An upcoming project that we have coming is the digester number two cleaning project. The district received three proposals for construction management services for the upcoming digester number two cleaning project. Staff has selected Michael K. Nunley and Associates to perform the necessary engineering services for the project. Expected start date for the project is October 2020. Regarding our emergency generator, during the annual load test of the emergency generator, a leak in the emergency generator's radiator was observed. The district has acquired a temporary emergency generator until the main generator has been repaired. It's approximately 1 to 3 weeks for repair completion. I did receive news today that they will be installing the repaired, radiator this Friday. So that'll be should hopefully be back to normal come this Friday. Moving on, the district has begun trunk sewer flushing and closed circuit television inspection of our trunk sewer lines. Mainline utility company has begun flushing the district's trunk sewer lines. Following completion of flushing, Mainline will begin the inspection of the district's trunk sewer lines by way of closed circuit television. And they will also be providing a report just basically on the overall condition of our trunk line. District's operation staff, they've completed a multitude of operation and maintenance tasks and work orders. Some training that staff has completed or participated in was job hazard analysis and hazardous materials labeling. And then modified staffing, Jeremy touched base on that in his district administrator's report. We did have some call-outs. There were two call-outs, July 10th and July 11th. 10:30 p.m. and at 10:10 p.m. We had a high final ORP for both occurrences. Operation staff responded and inspected the system. Upon inspection, the system had returned to normal. The cause of both callouts were due to the switchover from day to night on the disinfection control system. The district's electrical integrator changed settings in the control system to allow for a gradual change between day to night disinfection control settings, and we have not received a callout since the change. So regarding our exceedances, the total chlorine residual instantaneous maximum, the district had a permit exceedance for total chlorine residual instantaneous maximum on July 9th, 2020. The district observed a total chlorine residual of 16.4 milligrams per liter. Immediately following the observation, operation staff placed the sodium bisulfite pump in manual to assist with dechlorination. At 12:01, a resample was taken and a residual of 0.0 milligrams per liter was recorded. Operation staff left the sodium bisulfite pump in manual until the issue could be resolved. The cause of the exceedance was due to the programmable logic controller, a PLC, losing its IP address and its ability to communicate with the chemical pumps. There was a glitch in power at approximately 7:50 a.m. on the 9th, which may have been the cause of the PLC failure. The district has observed these glitches in the past, but has never observed a loss of the PLC's IP address and communication to the chemical pumps. To prevent reoccurrence, our electrician integrator reprogrammed the PLC and tested the IP address retention by cycling the power on and off. The PLC was able to hold its IP address even after the power was cycled off. If there were to be future power interruptions, the PLC should not lose its IP address or communication with the chemical pumps. Per the State Water Resources Control Board water quality enforcement policy, total chlorine residual is a group 2 pollutant, and the district will be assessed a fine of $3,000 by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Some other things I want to add, as we recently had another violation, which I will be reporting at the next board meeting. And I just want to just let the board know that we are currently operating in an abnormal situation. We have our clarifier rehab project going on currently. So we're operating on one primary clarifier. And then it's also typically during the summer months, we operate on two clarifiers. And especially just because we typically have higher flows during the summer. And our flows are higher. But again, with the coronavirus, they're not as high as they previously have been. But so we're just kind of we're learning. We don't typically operate on one clarifier during the summer. We've been taking notes on the operation of one clarifier during the summer months, the high tourist season, and just basically if this were to ever happen in the future again, we'll be more prepared for it. But I assure you, our staff is not happy with how the plant's been operating, but we are making the necessary changes to ensure that this doesn't continue happening. Furthermore, just our energy usage comparison. At the July 1st, 2020 board meeting, the board requested an energy cost comparison for the May to June 2020 and the May to June 2019 PG&E billing cycle. There was a rise in cost in the amount of $738 for the 2020 billing cycle compared to the 2019 billing cycle. The primary reason is due to the average rate per kilowatt hour being 21 cents in 2020 compared to 19 cents in 2019. In addition, during the May to June 2020 billing cycle, the district averaged 3,059 kilowatt hours per day compared to 2,967 kilowatt hours per day usage during the May through June 2019 billing cycle, a difference of 92 kilowatt hours per day. And with that, I am able to answer any questions that the board may have.
Thank you very much. Director Lee, do you have any questions?
So I do have a couple questions. Thank you very much. And Michael, thank you for that report and the update on the energy usage. Going back to the exceedance and the PLC. So is there a redundant sensor or redundant PLC that could be added to this and or other systems to potentially avoid these situations in the future? Or is this part of the, do you think the fix was adequate for adequate redundancy?
I believe the fix is adequate, but we also have backup systems in place in the event of, you know, a failure of the primary system, that system should come on. Unfortunately, at that time, our backup system did not come on. And I'm not sure if I can relate that to the glitch or, you know, I'm not going to point to that, but it should have came on and it didn't.
Okay. And maybe from a more global standpoint, does the district have a series of preventative maintenance work orders that it does to kind of ensure that our backup systems are operational? And if so, is that bearing fruit?
So we have initiated weekly checks. Typically, it was like a monthly check. We do calibrations and then just basically ensure that the probe is monitoring properly. But now we have initiated some weekly checks. Excuse me.
Okay. I appreciate that. So then, with regards to the exceedance, it feels like there's a connection between the Clarifier 2 project and the fact that it's not finished. And obviously tonight we authorized a different approach. So am I reading too much into that connection, or should we go back to FRM and indicate that short of their inability to finish the project, we would have had a clarifier back online and not have had that overage.
No, so this would have been, it would have saved a week possibly, but we're still planning to move forward with that launder work. If it is found out, basically the date that national coding can start the launder work is a ways away. We can start up that clarifier no problem after the FRM's job is completed. And that is fully my intentions, if that date is further out, that we start that clarifier up right away.
Okay, so the clarifier can be used. It would just have to be taken out of service and have the launder resurfaced.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Director Austin, any questions, Michael?
I don't have any questions, Michael.
I have one that I feel like I'm missing something. When we get exceedances, they're not always the same. So I'm not sure I heard you say what the exceedance actually was. Maybe you did, but it might have just gone right over my head.
Yeah, it's for total chlorine residual instantaneous max.
So it's the same thing as the previous one?
The previous one was a fecal coliform.
I misread that. Sorry. Thank you very much for that. Okay. Let's go ahead and see if there's anyone in the public who would like to speak on this item or ask questions.
I see no one with their hand raised and no emails.
Okay, then we will close public comment, and this is a receive and file, so there's nothing for us to do on this. So thank you all so much. And I guess we'll hear a little bit more next month from Michael on that. So thank you. This takes us now to board member communications. Directors Austin or Lee, anyone have communications at this time?
Nothing for me.
Then we will move forward to item 8. This is closed session. Keith, do you want to go ahead and announce that?
Sure, Madam Chair. We are going to do closed session now to perform public employee performance evaluations pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 for the District Legal Counsel and the District Administrator.
Thank you very much. And we will go ahead and adjourn to our closed session. So we'll exit out of this Zoom meeting and go to the private closed session meeting. And we will make, I presume, announcements out, any reportable action out at our next meeting.
Madam Chair, if I may, there are certain actions that could potentially be taken in the closed session that would need to be reported at this meeting. So any actions that would need to be reported could not be taken tonight, and they would need to be taken formally at the next meeting.
Thank you for that clarification.
Sure.
Okay, with that, we will adjourn to our closed session Zoom meeting. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you in 1 month.
Thank you, Michael.